This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
Into the happy hour. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Chris Elle stepping out for about 12, 15 minutes.
Thank you.
He'll be
goodness.
Back for the next segment. Scraby and I are just going to happy hour this way through for the next 59 minutes. And so we haven't really talked a ton of Padre baseball other than the fact that the preseason or spring training season kicks off tomorrow. But there were Padres at work today.
Yes, there were.
Mike Shildt
mm-hmm.
is doing what he's going to do for the next month, is talk to the media in the morning, give you the scrump scrape. Why don't you take us through some of the Mike Shildt chat?
You know, I didn't realize that Mike Shildt was a funny guy.
He's got
a dry humor
a little bit.
But I think this is the first question everybody wants to know. Is Manny Machado going to play tomorrow? And who are the regulars going to be in tomorrow's starting lineup?
Well, we haven't finalized that with our guys, so I don't want them to hear it through us. But most of them do know. But I would expect you to see a good representation in our infield and our outfield.
Does that mean the outfield could be anything.
It's fair.
Where will Manny be?
Manny will be enjoying the contest. Close to me, not right beside me, but close to me. Manny's training in a really good place. Was one to clearly be smart. You can expect a DH game out of him when things progress as they are, sooner rather than later.
Does that mean Xander at second tomorrow, likely?
You guys are great. I love the persistence. I applaud it. I think it's fantastic.
Possibly.
But yeah, I. Inquiring minds will continue to want to know.
See, Mike Shildt is doing nothing different than what AJ does, Eric does, Grubner. They answer the question. They don't give you a lot, but at least he adds a little color, right?
He does.
He puts the little commentary. You guys are persistent. I like that.
He does. He's trying to, at least...
He's acknowledging that, I know you have to ask me this question. Guess what? I'm still not giving you the answer, but we can laugh about it.
But what's the point in not giving away that Xander's playing second base tomorrow?
You know what, Scrave? Honestly...
There is no point?
I don't know.
It's a coach thing?
It's just been the way it has been since I've been able to comprehend what was going on.
We should assume that he's playing second base tomorrow, right?
We could. Maybe he's not. What I do know about managers, GMs, executives, they don't want to say something and then it not happen, because then you have to answer the questions on why. Sometimes there's a good answer why. Sometimes there's an answer that you don't want everybody to know why. And so as opposed to putting themselves out there, they'd rather just say, I'm not going to reveal that right now. Because especially in spring training, So many things can happen. It happens literally every year. Guy's in the lineup for a spring training game. He's scratched before the game starts.
Yeah.
You didn't have to answer the questions. Why did you say he's going to play and then he didn't play? And, you know, if it's a reason that you don't mind sharing, then it's not a big deal. But a lot of times you do mind sharing it. You don't want everybody to know what that reason is. Maybe it's injury. Maybe it's something personal. And so it just gives you a little bit of out. But that's the best answer I got for you, Scrape.
No, that's good. No, that's definitely good. Mike Schilt was also... This is a storyline we have to start paying attention to with the game starting and the season upcoming. But Yu Darvish is beginning to throw a little bit later than some of the other pitchers. And so the media asked Mike Schilt about his timeline.
I don't think necessarily. I mean, the lives are... We have value in the lives. And again, guys with more experiences and comfort levels, them being able to get built up in lives and work on some things... And actually without, you know, in a more of a controlled environment is important to be able to get guys to get built up. So it's a fine line because we don't want to overcorrect and sit there and go, okay, we feel like we've got to rush and get everybody ready, which we clearly are going to be for Korea. We also don't want to ramp up and be mindful that, you know, two games clearly are important. We have 160 after that. So, you know, we can all do the math on that.
Do you currently expect Darvish to start one of those two games?
I currently have some thoughts about it.
I love Mike.
That's a good answer.
I currently have some thoughts about it.
I wonder, well, I mean, it's a good answer because he's not going to give us any information. And no, I understand
again,
why that.
Again, and quite frankly, why do you need to know, and why do we need to know who is going to start on March 21st?
Because we've been waiting for the season to start.
Still,
we want to know.
Guess what? After I tell you, you still are going to wait.
No, then we break down Yu Darvish in the second game of the year for the next month.
See, that's ridiculous. But, you know, again, he's going to do the dance. He's going to do the whole, you know, song and dance with the media on things that he doesn't want to reveal. And why would he reveal... I mean, I'll say this. I know Dave Roberts has revealed his two starters. Somebody gets hurt, then guess what? That's going to change anyway. So, you know, or if somebody has a setback, whatever it could be. So I don't know. I don't know that we need to know. I think if they're healthy, they're likely to start Tim and Joe are likely to start games 1 and 2.
All right. I want to know now, but it's fine. I'm not going to know. It's
You're
okay.
Part of this microwave
society.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
Gotta have it now.
Let's hear about the knuckleballer, Matt Waldron.
Matt Waldron.
Yes.
He's not a knuckleballer. He's a guy with a knuckleball.
Oh, okay.
It's different.
Well, Mike Schilt was asked about the development of his knuckleball, so here's what he said.
Yeah, I was really pleased with Matt last year. Know he had a good offseason. You know, it's a good conversation because he's got an outlier pitch in the knuckleball, but I don't necessarily think we want to label him, not that you are, a knuckleball pitcher. This guy has other pitches that you look at, one of the knuckleball complements those, and we also want to be able to him to have it as a weapon, which it clearly is. This thing's nasty. So, you know, it's pitching, right? Art of pitching is disruption of timing, so he's got the He's got a multiple arsenal, including the knuckleball, and just blending it in appropriately to make sense based on the moment of competition.
I would like to apologize to Matt
Waldron.
Yeah,
I told you better stop calling him a knuckleballer. Mike didn't like that.
I think it's kind of cool to say knuckleballer.
He's not a knuckleballer.
But he is a knuckleballer.
He has a knuckleball. That'd be like calling somebody who has a curveball a curveballer. Oh, he's a curveballer.
No one's ever said that history of baseball.
He's not a knuckleballer. He could be, but he's not. Right now, he still uses his other pitches at a high enough percentage where you can't call him a knuckleballer. He doesn't call himself a knuckleballer.
Okay, then I won't call him a knuckleballer because I don't want to call him something
he doesn't
like. Did
you hear the kind of baseball nerd come out of Mike as he was answering that question? Like, he like tickled himself inside. He was like, this guy's nasty. This thing is nasty. And then he kind of went back into answering the question.
He did. Yes. I didn't quite catch it like you did, but I'm going to go back and watch later.
He's a baseball lifer, man.
He definitely is. Something a little bit different. This is not from Mike Schilt, but this is from Sammy Lev and Jake Cronenworth. Sammy Lev got to do an interview. This is a 2-minute clip. I think what Jake Cronenworth says about bringing a championship to San Diego is pretty fun to listen to.
How do you like San Diego just as a whole? I mean, it seems like you love it.
Yeah, I love San Diego. I mean, you know, getting traded over in 20 and obviously didn't really know what to expect, a little older of a player, and, you know, outside of the baseball part, just the city, what it has, what it provides, the fans at the stadium, like, I don't think there's a better place to play in baseball.
It would seem to me, I mean, it feels like we don't talk about it a lot because there's focus on the play on the field, there's focus on money, the contracts, all of it, but being in a place you really like and as pretty and wonderful as San Diego is, like, day-to-day, that could make a really big difference.
Man, I think, you know, it's a great way to put it. Like I said, man, I don't think there's a better place from the city of San Diego, the weather, the beach, the ocean, you know, the military's there. You got all this stuff going on. The stadium's right downtown. The fans, you know, everything involved just makes it such an attractive place. And when you're there and you really get to enjoy it, you know, it's one of a kind.
Going off how you feel about the city and the fans, I mean, what would it mean to you personally if it's this year, if it's at some point during this contract, this group was able to bring that championship to that city?
Yeah, I mean, you can see I'm getting chills right now. You know, obviously that's the main goal for all of us. And, you know, we're the only team in town. I know we got some other sports teams as well, but, you know, I feel like the city kind of, you know, ebbs and flows with us. And, you know, I don't think a lot of players realize that, but, you know, to kind of feel that from the fan base, like they're living it as much as we are, and to hopefully bring that first championship to a city, especially a city like San Diego that's so close, man, that day's going to be special.
That's an astute observation from a non-San Diegan there.
That is.
That the city kind of ebbs and flows with what the Padres are doing, and it's so true. It wasn't always that way. I would argue that that was the role of the Chargers for a long time, but once they moved away, the Padres have stepped into that fold. Jake was a lot like myself when he got traded. He was older, 26, 25. I think he was turning 26 during the season in July. I got traded here when I was 26. And what's different is I kind of knew what I was walking into. He didn't. It was a blank canvas for him. And he had a great first two seasons. He struggled a little bit the last two. I'm just looking forward for him. I'm looking forward to seeing him just kind of get back to being Jake.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs to be required to be a voice or a leader. He just needs to go out and just play this year.
Because we've seen it. And on Eric Hosmer Retirement Day, everybody should thank Eric Hosmer for discovering Jake Cronenworth, because Eric Hosmer goes out during the 2020 season. Jake Cronenworth comes in. We never look back.
Eric could be credited with a lot. Toddy, he was one of the dudes who walked up into AJ's office.
Oh, about
like
getting him on the opening day roster.
He needs to be on the opening day
roster. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Jake Cronenworth was another one. I mean, Manny's here virtually because Eric was here.
Because they're friends.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
There's a whole other conversation we're going to get into, but someone on the chat says, I really enjoyed the interview, but what's up with that heavy equipment noise in the background?
Yeah.
Well, you have no control over this.
It's the beginning of spring training. Yeah. Some things are still pulling up, showing
delivering.
Up. Delivering. Yeah. Cars, things of that nature.
The one thing I will say about going to spring training that makes me nervous is that they blast music in the batting cages.
Yes, they do.
And they obviously don't have censored music.
It's not edited.
And then whenever no one's even there, it's just blasting. And I'm like, so one day I went to go look to turn it off, and then I got caught real quick by someone. I'm not going to reveal who it was, but they said, you do not want to go in there. No. You will never get back
I'm
on this thing
again.
I'm glad
that I didn't see you walking towards that place. Because I would have had to stop.
Well, I'm
you
sorry.
Right
the Kendrick Lamar was not working with our radio show.
Hey, we in their space. That's how it goes, buddy. All right, let's get to break. Speaking of Eric Hosmer, Chris and I will discuss his new podcast and his retirement when we return. More Gwen and Chris on the way.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper. And people yell,
"Come on, move!"
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gwen and Chris rolling through a happy hour on this Wednesday. Hope your Wednesday's happy. I don't know about you, Tony Gwynn Jr., but I reckon I saw dozens and dozens of celebration parties going on in America's finest city today. People gathering in the streets, shooting off fireworks, celebrating the news that our old friend Eric Hosmer announced his retirement today. I only say that in jest, because obviously nobody actually out and out celebrated. But, you know, it's an interesting conundrum, Eric Hosmer and his time here with the Padres. Was it as bad as everybody made it out to be? I mean, you know, he would acknowledge that statistically he didn't do the kinds of things that he wanted to do.
Right.
But what was it about Eric Hosmer that, for whatever reason, Tony, seemed to rub everybody around here the wrong way? He never got on San Diego's good side.
I don't know, honestly. I mean, outside of performance, which is understandable for any fan base to be upset about, I can't put my finger on what it was. I thought of Eric as a good clubhouse guy, a guy that generally led especially the young guys in the right direction and gave them guidance. So, I mean, outside of that, I don't know, you know, outside of the performance, I don't really know what it was that had people up in arms. If it was just a performance, I think that's fair, but beyond that, I'm at a loss.
Yeah, it seemed like the dislike, if you can use that term, certainly went beyond performance with Hosmer. And, you know, it's interesting to me. I mean, he dropped a pop fly or didn't catch a pop fly at the end of a game in Houston. You remember that one, Tony, right?
Yeah.
And he came down the first baseline and the ball dropped. And people still refer to that. To this day, every time I'm playing softball, if anybody even comes close to missing a pop-up, It's, oh, you Eric Hosmer'd that one.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's 5 years ago. It's still on everybody's mind. And on a couple of other occasions, he, instead of stepping toward the throw at shortstop, in order to handle a bounce or to try and make a play, he stepped backwards, right, into foul territory. Something that I have seen many other first basemen do.
Yeah.
In order to avoid a runner, in order to, you know, get a throw. But I think once he did that and the throw got away, and forever and ever in the minds of San Diegans, the worst first baseman who ever played the position.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't want to say it's unfair, but it was unfair. It was too much for really minor transgressions.
It just seemed like those particular incidents were happening as he wasn't swinging the bat well.
Yeah.
And so, like, it became like this big ball of, I think, nonsense, ultimately, because, again, outside of performance, which is a completely fair thing to be, you know, to be on him about, there was nothing else there. And so I think, ultimately, you just lean on the fact that he got, you know, a pretty good chunk of change to come here to San Diego. And I think, as you heard him admit at this point, that he didn't, the performance wasn't up to his standard either.
Yeah.
Well, and that's ultimately, you know, how it really should have ended.
Yeah, it's just amazing how the narrative went here about Eric Hosmer. And don't think that he didn't recognize it.
Oh, he did.
And he said as much. Now, he had a new podcast that today is where he announced his retirement. And he addressed what happened, you know, while he was in San Diego, admitting that he did not perform up to his expectations, but at the same time kind of wondering why the narrative was so negative.
You know, when I went to San Diego, I'll be the first to admit the performance wasn't what I wanted it to be, wasn't what I envisioned it to be. But at the same time, you know, some of the stuff that was being written, or some of the stuff that I read or people had tell me, was, you know, I wasn't doing that due diligence in the locker room. I was actually doing the opposite of pulling people apart. And that's something to me where I felt like I was on an island right there. Like, I want to tell my story. I want to be able to tell people what's going on here, what's really happening. But I just didn't have that platform. And I feel like baseball players in general don't have that platform.
Well, the good news for Eric Hosmer, I guess, Tony, is now he has the platform. He's got his podcast, so he can say and give his side of the story. But it's just interesting how things snowballed on him here in San Diego. I mean, this is a guy, if you look at his career, right, World Series champion, and regarded as one of the reasons why they won that World Championship in Kansas City. He wasn't just a guy that was on the team. He was one of the leaders that helped them win that title. He's an All-Star. He's a Gold Glove winner. But in the minds of San Diegans, he stole our money, right? And that's just, I guess that just goes with it. Anytime a guy comes to town and doesn't perform the way they wanted to.
Yep. I mean, that's... And, you know, it'll be interesting because I have no doubt that Haas will have plenty of guys that people want to hear from on this platform.
Right.
But it'll be interesting to see, had Haas had this platform, right, would he have been comfortable enough to go on and be like, listen, this is just plainly not true, and get into detail about it, right? Because that's ultimately what he wasn't really comfortable going into. And more importantly, didn't feel there was a space for it. And so it'll be interesting to see when guys come on there, if there is something along these lines, how willing will they be to go forward and, you know, kind of really peel the curtain back of what's going on in the clubhouse. That's usually sacred ground. And because when you think about it, that was part of the reason we never heard from Hans. I think he's a big-time believer in those, some of the old-school values that a clubhouse has. And so as stuff started to leak out, It would have been interesting if that platform was around at that point.
Yeah, but what really leaked out, and how much truth was there to whatever leaked out? I mean, people just assumed that he was divisive somehow in the clubhouse. I don't ever recall a story saying that Eric Hosmer was divisive in the clubhouse, but everybody just kind of went with that as fact.
Yeah, as he was saying that, I was trying to harken back to think who would have written an article saying as much, and maybe there was. Over his tenure, there were a lot of things going on at different times, right? But the narrative was definitely out there, but I can't remember an article actually stating that he was being divisive. Now, I could have missed it in that case.
Well, you obviously were traveling with the team. I mean, and obviously, you saw many instances of this divisiveness. No, you didn't.
I didn't,
and that's
though.
My point, right? So, but this has been going on in sports for forever, really. Hosmer's probably the latest, one to be affected by it, at least here in San Diego. I mean, Tommy Pham came to San Diego. We've documented that many times. This guy's had a great career. He had one season that wasn't up to what he normally does. Happened to be here in San Diego. All of a sudden, he was a bad dude and argued with the fans and got into issues and had that one off-field incident. Look, if Tommy Pham would have hit 25 home runs that year and hit, 290 and driven in, his normal 80 runs, the incident would have been swept under the rug.
Right.
But that just doesn't happen anymore. It goes all the way back. I remember a player for the Angels when I was growing up by the name of Lyman Bostock, and he ended up dying in a car accident several years after this. But this guy was an all-star, had been one for the Minnesota Twins, and the Angels signed him in the early days of free agency. And he came to the Angels, and Tony, he could not get a hit for like the first 4 months of the season. And I remember this guy, his hair was falling out. He went in newspaper articles. They didn't have the same social media, obviously, they do now. But he said, I want to give my salary back. Right. I don't even want my salary. I feel like I've let so many people down. And, of course, the fans were on his case and on the organization's case. And, this had nothing to do with his passing several years later. But my point being, these guys are people, right? And they recognize what's going on. And there is an inherent pressure in signing a free agent contract
somewhere. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
And we don't really think of it in that way. We just assume you're getting a ton of money, so your life is perfect now. And it doesn't always work out that way.
I mean, in a perfect world, it does, right? You sign the deal, you cut first year of the deal, you have one of your career years, and yet you just keep doing that every year. I mean, it never works like that.
Right.
And Eric is not the only example of signing some place and it not working out the way that people envisioned it. And so, I don't know. I'm happy that he's content where he is in terms of actually being willing to announce his retirement. And now he's got a platform that I think is going to be pretty successful.
Yeah. Well, I think the final story on Eric Hosmer maybe hasn't 100% been written, but Eric Hosmer is going to go down in the minds of most baseball fans as a really, really much better than average player who won a World Series, who helped his team.
Helped lead his team to a World Series.
Lead his team, all-star, gold glove performer. He's going to go down like that everywhere but here.
Right.
In San Diego. So, Eric, congratulations on your retirement. And no, I did not see a single party being had here in San Diego in the wake of that news. We will take a break, come back, our interview of the day, more Gwen and Chris as we roll towards 6 o'clock, and then Scraby takes over with the Chronicles. Gwen and Chris on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan.
Back here in the Odyssey Palace on 97.3 The Fan. It's just me. Getting ready for the Scraby Chronicles, as they say. I am Matt Scraby, by the way, if you didn't know. Chris is calling the Aztecs women's basketball game, and You know, I let Tony out a little bit early because he wanted to go see his daughter's championship game. That is why he is still in San Diego, after all. He's going to be driving out tomorrow morning to Peoria. And he should be on the call with Jesse Agler. It's going to be aired right here on 97.3 The Fan. So, noon. Make sure you tune in because you're going to hear your first sounds of baseball in 2024. I think I've said this before. I think I've actually said this many times before. But there's something that I just love about baseball on the radio. I think it's one of the best things. It's one of the reasons I'm in sports radio, is listening to baseball. And if you have good announcers like we do, good color analysts, good play-by-play guy, it's even better. Because those guys, if you've never really listened to the radio broadcast, I like it. And then we're going to hear from Mark Ziegler, who is still in Logan, Utah, so he'll give us an update on what happened with the Aztecs last night. And then you get the Scraby Show at 6 o'clock, which I am going to talk about Eric Hosmer. I'm actually going to present three different perspectives. I'll get to that a little bit, but I'm going to present three different perspectives on this Hosmer thing during the Scraby Show around 6:15, 6:20. But I want to pump up Jesse and Tony real quick, because as a sports talk guy, I love sports talk shows. And when you're listening to the game, you kind of get a sports talk show that is in the middle of a baseball game. So it's an easy listen, and I cannot wait to tune in tomorrow. I cannot wait. Scrabinator's in the chat. Scrabinator's are showing up early. No, Anthony, I'm not going to name. There's something that everybody wants me to say. I'm not going to do it. But we do have Mark Ziegler, and we do have some traffic, so let's hear from Mark Ziegler. He's going to talk about with the guys earlier. He talked about the Aztecs losing to Utah State, and he also kind of gave us some insight into some of the insults that Utah State fans throw at the Aztecs, or threw at the Aztecs.
Mark, I guess my first question is, you know, you wrote up this weekend how the Aztecs are, you know, were ranked number four by the committee. They would get a four seed had the tournament started today. And you went into great detail about how those seedings normally hold. Do you feel that the seeding holds despite the loss last night?
I think so. And the reason is they were 14th overall, not 16th. And so that gives them a two-team cushion to falling out of the four-seed line to the five-seed line. And I think a quad one win on the road where they were not favored is not going to hurt them that much. You know, maybe hurt them a little bit. But like Joe Lenardi, who, you know, puts out daily bracketology this time of year, he had them as the 16th team overall. And so that means they dropped two spots, but they're still a four seed. Now, I think what it did do is their margin of error is gone.
Right.
So if you're going to lose again, it better be to a really good team, and you better not be favored. And that's going to be hard to do the rest of the way. Now, if they get into the conference tournament, they get to the semis, the finals, I think the committee's pretty much got the one through four seats done, and they're worried about the 11s and 10s and that type of thing. So if they get to the semifinals of the conference tournament without a loss, I think they're okay. But they can't lose any of these next four. They just cannot lose any of them because none of them are quad one wins. And even though, you know, they always struggle at Fresno State on the road, and UNLV is going to be really, really hard, I think they have to win them.
Yeah, it would seem so. I mean, you kind of hit on it a little bit, Mark. The Aztecs have just struggled in the conference on the road. They just have not been able to get over their hump. I mean, you've been at all of these games. Is there a reoccurring theme in these losses on the road?
Oh, every single time it's the same thing. They're close in the second half, and that's the encouraging thing. They're not getting blown out. Even in the game at New Mexico, they lost by 18. You know, people forget that was a one-point game midway through the second half. They were up 12 in the first half. They play well enough to win in these games, but the problem is when they get into crunch time or they get it close, 4 minutes to go last night, down one, come all the way back, all the momentum on their side, making all the plays, all of a sudden they just can't make a play. And it's a turnover or it's back-to-back turnovers or, at Nevada it was back-to-back offensive rebounds again last night. Two possessions in a row where they gave up offensive rebounds that turned into five total points. I mean, those are just killers. And they're not making plays at the other end. They're not making shots. And it's just in those stretches of the game. It's not the rest of the game. It's with 5 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, whatever it is. At Nevada, it was the final minute. And in the crucial part of the game, they're just not making plays. And that's just, I don't know what it is. It's just this little flaw in this team. It's like if they played 100 more road games and sold out arenas at altitude, I think they'd lose all 100. I mean, in the same way, it's just, that's who they are this season. But now in neutral courts and at home, they're undefeated.
Yeah, and that's what you brought up in the article. I mean, when you get into the, other than the conference tournament being at Las Vegas, you know, pretty much everything postseason is always a neutral site game, and they seem to find a way there. So that is something they can take with them. Was Jaden Ledee 100% healthy last night, Mark? He didn't look right. Came out of the game very early in each half, which I understand because of the altitude, but, I mean, he willed his way to 23 points last night.
Yeah, you know, I asked Brian Dutcher about that. He did not indicate there were any kind of illness, anything along those lines. I think, you know, sometimes with these guys, the altitude just gets to them. And I think it did last night. You know, maybe a little bit tired, maybe he didn't get a good night's sleep. He definitely was laboring. There was no doubt about it. I noticed it the first couple plays down the floor, trying to run down defense. You know, they'll come back on defense and they'll be, you know, getting ready for the half court set. And he's just gasping for air. And then he just sucks it up and plays. That said, I mean, he was incredible last night. And if it wasn't for him, they would have gotten blown out. He didn't get any help other than, you know, a couple guys off the bench, but from the rest of the starters, they gave him nothing.
Mark Ziegler joins us here, Union Tribune. And Mark, you know, the thing, I look at the stat sheet, and it's very rare that I see a team shoot 50% in one half and close to that in the second half. Was that more of Utah State hitting tough shots, or was the defense a little step behind last night?
Well, it's always a step behind in altitude. I mean, I if you don't tell me where they're playing and just show it to me, I can tell you immediately if they're in altitude or not. It's not that guys are keeled over, gasping for air. It's just, it looks like they're running in sand. And that's just how it is. And usually by this point in the season, they've gotten used to it and they're a little bit better. This team, for whatever reason, has not made the same strides that other teams have late in the season, you know, playing multiple games in altitude. And so I think that was part of it. Utah State's not a great three-point shooting team, but, you know, they were great in their own building last night. And San Diego State defensively, you know, let them take some threes. I think that was part of the game plan. They went under a lot of ball screens. Darius Brown hit a couple, or hit more than a couple. And he's usually not that type of shooter. So I think it was a little bit of both, but it definitely was the difference in the game.
Mark, Lamont Butler, I mean, he's everybody's all-time favorite guy, and he's always going to be everybody's all-time favorite guy. They'll never be able to take away what he did. But how does he have a game like he did last night? It just didn't go his way. I mean, goose eggs in points and assists. I mean, to me, I don't think we'll ever see another game like that from Lamont Butler. It just, for whatever reason, didn't work. Did they take him out, or did he take himself out of it?
They took him out. I think they just realized he wasn't doing anything. I think it's hugely, hugely frustrating, if we're being candid, for a guy who's a senior to be that inconsistent. And what's really, and we've talked about this a little bit before, what's really bizarre about this team is you have such wild inconsistencies among individual efforts. Some guys like Lamont will have a game where he'll score in the 20s, and then he'll have a game like he did last night where he just completely disappears. And that's just not him. That's everybody except Jaylen Ledee. I mean, he's pretty much gives you what he can every night. And I think the refs kind of move him up or down in terms of scoring, depending on how they're calling the game. But he's consistent. The rest of them are not. Yet the team is consistent.
Yeah.
The team's really good at home, pretty good in neutral floors, and really bad on the road. And that's what's just kind of bizarre about this team. But, yeah, that was, you know, that's something that maybe you expect from a freshman, maybe from a sophomore who hasn't played that much. You're going to have inconsistent moments. But for a fourth-year senior who's had really good games at Utah State, in fact, his breakout as a freshman was there when he had, I think, 5 steals in a game. And so he had good vibes in the building, but I just don't know what happened. And, again, maybe it was a little bit of the altitude. Who knows what it was, but he wasn't there.
It's certainly a interesting way to see it, right? The individual performances, inconsistent, but the team very consistent. And maybe that's why they have struggled on the road, is because you kind of need those things to happen for you on the road. Mark, there was a lot of talk on the broadcast last night about this conference, and obviously they highlighted the five teams that currently sit well as it pertains to the tournament. But there is a sixth team. You mentioned UNLV that could be lurking. I mean, is there? Can you envision a scenario in which six teams actually get in to this conference, into this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as that sounds, there's certainly that's in play. And here's the scenario that no one's really talking about, but. Okay, let's. UNLV does not have the metrics to get in as an at large, so it's the other six teams that would. But what happens if UNLV on its home floor finally puts it together and wins the conference tournament? They're talented enough, and they have the motivation because they know they're not going to the NCAA tournament otherwise. So what happens if they win this thing? Do they take seven teams? I mean, I can't envision that. I think the bottom team. Would drop out. And one thing that's going to happen between now and the end of the regular season is, you know, you have a bunch of teams with five losses right now, but they're going to play each other. And if the results don't go just right, you're going to have a team with seven losses, maybe even a team with eight, but probably a team among that group with seven losses. And I think that team might be out unless their metrics are through the roof. So I tend to think it's going to be five and one team will drop off, but you know, just keep an eye on UNLV in that conference tournament, and that could be the absolute wild card among all wild cards.
Mark Ziegler, I want to ask you one thing that I don't know that I've asked you before, but it comes to mind in the game last night, watching Reese Waters jawing a little bit with some of the fans there at Utah State. And you go to all of these venues and see all of these fans. I mean, the Pit. And Utah State's fans are crazy and everywhere else. And San Diego State's fans, are, for their part, are remarkable. How do you kind of rate the fans in this conference? Who do you think is, I don't want to say the best, but where is the best atmosphere in the Mountain West Conference? What's the toughest in terms of opposing fans?
Well, the best student section, I think, is Utah State. When they're in, you know, when they fill out their 4,000 seats and they were like they were last night. I mean, just the sheer size of it, it's 40% of the arena. And they're organized, they're allowed. I wrote a little piece about what they do. They hand out a sheet before the game that's got, like, bio information. Rick and
really?
The other team's players. Yeah, I'll have it up online a little bit here later. I'll try to put a screenshot of it. And it's, it's really, you know, they have one side of it is all their chants and their traditions. The other one, you know, went through five different players and it, you know, one had a QR code to a Twitter page that had a 10-year-old picture of Darian Trammell in a suit at a wedding.
So they don't leave any stone unturned there.
Another one had, somehow they got a hold of, Micah had somehow posted his Cash App handle. For money transfers. And they said, God, wouldn't it be a shame if a whole bunch of people put in money transfer requests to Micah? So, you know, you got students sitting around for an hour before the game holding their seat. I mean, they all have cell phones. I mean, how many of them did a Cash App request to Micah? I mean, that's the kind of stuff they do. It's great there. The Pit is great. And one thing people have to realize is college basketball today, just like college football, a lot of the crowds are shrinking. And in the Pac-12, except for Arizona, I mean, maybe a couple games in Colorado, they are not full arenas at all. The Mountain West is kind of an aberration where Nevada sold out most nights, Utah State, New Mexico, Boise, San Diego State. You know, those teams are all getting huge crowds, and it's, you know, don't take it for granted. It's really, really cool and really special. And the one thing I want to say about Reese Waters, John, Adam, whether you think that's a tee or not, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, Chris, but you saw on Friday night, Jalen House did that multiple times to the show, pointing at him, gesturing at him, swearing at him, screaming at him, no tee. And the ref who called the tee on Reese Waters is the same ref who refed the game in the Pit with San Diego State and would not call a tee on Jalen House for basically high-stepping into the Aztecs bench. So I thought that was a little odd. and a little inconsistent.
It's very inconsistent, and I looked at that replay. I was trying to figure out what Reese did to get the technical, and it looked like he was just yelling back to the crowd saying, I made a shot. That's not a technical foul, so I don't. Mark, I guess my first question is, you know, you wrote up this weekend how the Aztecs are, you know, were ranked number four by the committee. They would get a four seed had the tournament started today. And you went into great detail about how those seedings normally hold. Do you feel that the seeding holds despite the loss last night?
I think so. And the reason is they were 14th overall, not 16th. And so that gives them a two-team cushion to falling out of the four seed line to the five seed line. And I think a quad one win on the road where they were not favored is not going to hurt them that much. It'll maybe hurt them a little bit. But like Joe Lenardi, who, you know, puts out daily bracketology this time of year, he had them as the 16th team overall. And so that means they dropped two spots, but they're still a four seed. Now, I think what it did do is their margin of error is gone.
Right.
So if you're going to lose again, it better be to a really good team, and you better not be favored. And that's going to be hard to do the rest of the way. Now, if they get into the conference tournament, they get to the semis, the finals, I think the committee's pretty much got the one through four seats done, and they're worried about the 11s and 10s and that type of thing. So if they get to the semifinals of the conference tournament without a loss, I think they're okay. But they can't lose any of these next four. They just cannot lose any of them because none of them are quad one wins. And even though, you know, they always struggle at Fresno State on the road, and UNLV is going to be really, really hard, I think they have to win them.
Yeah, it would seem so. I mean, you kind of hit on it a little bit, Mark. The Aztecs have just struggled in the conference on the road. They just have not been able to get over their hump. I mean, you've been at all of these games. Is there a reoccurring theme in these losses on the road?
Oh, every single time it's the same thing. They're close in the second half, and that's the encouraging thing. They're not getting blown out. Even in the game at New Mexico, they lost by 18. You know, people forget that was a one-point game midway through the second half. They were up 12 in the first half. They play well enough to win in these games, but the problem is when they get into crunch time or they get it close, 4 minutes to go last night, down one, come all the way back, all the momentum on their side, making all the plays, all of a sudden they just can't make a play. And it's a turnover or it's back-to-back turnovers or, at Nevada it was back-to-back offensive rebounds again last night. Two possessions in a row where they gave up offensive rebounds that turned into five total points. I mean, those are just killers. And they're not making plays at the other end. They're not making shots. And it's just in those stretches of the game. It's not the rest of the game. It's with 5 minutes to go, 7 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, whatever it is. At Nevada, it was the final minute. And in the crucial part of the game, they're just not making plays. And that's just, I don't know what it is. It's just this little flaw in this team. And it's just, it's like if they played 100 more road games and sold out arenas at altitude, I think they'd lose all 100. I mean, in the same way, it's just that's who they are this season. But now in neutral courts and at home, they're undefeated.
Yeah, and that's what you brought up in the article. I mean, when you get into the other than the conference tournament being at Las Vegas, you know, pretty much everything postseason is always a neutral site game, and they seem to find a way there. So that is something they can take with them. Was Jaden and Ladie 100% healthy last night, Mark? He didn't look right. Came out of the game very early in each half, which I understand because of the altitude. But I mean, he willed his way to 23 points last night.
Yeah, you know, I asked Brian Dutcher about that. He did not indicate there were any kind of illness, anything along those lines. I think, you know, sometimes with these guys, the altitude just gets to them. And I think it did last night. You know, maybe a little bit tired, maybe didn't get a good night's sleep. But he definitely was laboring. There was no doubt about it. I noticed it the first couple plays down the floor, trying to run down defense. You know, they'll come back on defense and they'll be, you know, getting ready for the half court set. And he's just gasping for air. And then he just sucks it up and plays. That said, I mean, he was incredible last night. And if it wasn't for him, they would have gotten blown out. He didn't get any help other than, you know, a couple guys off the bench, but from the rest of the starters, they gave him nothing.
Mark Ziegler joins us here, Union Tribune. And Mark, you know, the thing, I look at the stat sheet, and it's very rare that I see a team shoot 50% in one half and close to that in the second half. Was that more of Utah State hitting tough shots, or was the defense a little step behind last night?
Well, it's always a step behind in altitude. I mean, I if you don't tell me where they're playing and just show it to me, I can tell you immediately if they're in altitude or not. It's not that guys are keeled over, gasping for air. It's just, it looks like they're running in sand. And that's just how it is. And usually by this point in the season, they've gotten used to it and they're a little bit better. This team, for whatever reason, has not made the same strides that other teams have late in the season, you know, playing multiple games in altitude. And so I think that was part of it. Utah State's not a great three-point shooting team, but, you know, they were great in their own building last night. And San Diego State defensively, you know, let them take some threes. I think that was part of the game plan. They went under a lot of ball screens. Darius Brown hit a couple, or hit more than a couple, and he's usually not that type of shooter. So I think it was a little bit of both, but it definitely was the difference in the game.
Mark, Lamont Butler, I mean, he's everybody's all-time favorite guy, and he's always going to be everybody's all-time favorite guy. They'll never be able to take away what he did. But how does he have a game like he did last night? It just didn't go his way. I mean, goose eggs in points and assists. I mean, to me, I don't think we'll ever see another game like that from Lamont Butler. It just for whatever reason, didn't work. Did they take him out, or did he take himself out of it?
They took him out. I think they just realized he wasn't doing anything. I think it's hugely, hugely frustrating, if we're being candid, for a guy who's a senior to be that inconsistent. And what's really, and we've talked about this a little bit before, what's really bizarre about this team is you have such wild inconsistencies among individual efforts. Some guys like Lamont will have a game where he'll score in the 20s, and then he'll have a game like he did last night where he just completely disappears. And that's just not him. That's everybody except Jalen Adee. I mean, he's pretty much gives you what he can every night. And I think the refs kind of move him up or down in terms of scoring, depending on how they're calling the game. But he's consistent. The rest of them are not. Yet the team is consistent.
Yeah.
The team's really good at home, pretty good in neutral floors, and really bad on the road. And that's what's just kind of bizarre about this team. But, yeah, that was, you know, that's something that maybe you expect from a freshman, maybe from a sophomore who hasn't played that much. You're going to have inconsistent moments. But for a fourth-year senior who's had really good games at Utah State, in fact, his breakout as a freshman was there when he had, I think, 5 steals in a game. And so he had good vibes in the building, but I just don't know what happened. And, again, maybe it was a little bit of the altitude. Who knows what it was, but he wasn't there.
It's certainly a interesting way to see it, right? The individual performances inconsistent, but the team very consistent. And maybe that's why they have struggled on the road, is because you kind of need those things to happen for you on the road. Mark, there was a lot of talk on the broadcast last night about this conference, and obviously they highlighted the five teams that currently sit well as it pertains to the tournament. But there is a sixth team. You mentioned UNLV that could be lurking. I mean, can you envision a scenario in which 6 teams actually get in to this conference, into this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as that sounds, there's certainly that's in play. And here's the scenario that no one's really talking about, but. Okay, let's. UNLV does not have the metrics to get in as an at large, so it's the other 6 teams that would. But what happens if UNLV on its home floor finally puts it together and wins the conference tournament? They're talented enough, and they have the motivation because they know they're not going to the NCAA tournament otherwise. So what happens if they win this thing? Do they take 7 teams? I mean, I can't envision that. I think the bottom team. Would drop out. And one thing that's going to happen between now and the end of the regular season is, you know, you have a bunch of teams with 5 losses right now, but they're going to play each other. And if the results don't go just right, you're going to have a team with 7 losses, maybe even a team with 8, but probably a team among that group with 7 losses. And I think that team might be out unless their metrics are through the roof. So I tend to think it's going to be 5 and one team will drop off, but you know, just keep an eye on UNLV in that conference tournament, and that could be the absolute wild card among all wild cards.
Mark Ziegler, I want to ask you one thing that I don't know that I've asked you before, but it comes to mind in the game last night, watching Reese Waters jawing a little bit with some of the fans there at Utah State. And you go to all of these venues and see all of these fans. I mean, the Pit. And Utah State's fans are crazy and everywhere else. And San Diego State's fans, are, for their part, are remarkable. How do you kind of rate the fans in this conference? Who do you think is, I don't want to say the best, but where is the best atmosphere in the Mountain West Conference? What's the toughest in terms of opposing fans?
Well, the best student section, I think, is Utah State. When they're in, you know, when they fill out their 4,000 seats and they were like they were last night. I mean, just the sheer size of it, it's 40% of the arena. And it, and they're organized, they're allowed. I wrote a little piece about what they do. They hand out a sheet before the game that's got, like, bio information. Rick and
really?
Neil, the other team's players. Yeah, and, oh, yeah. I'll have it up online a little bit here later. I'll try to put a screenshot of it. And it's, yeah, it's really, you know, they have one side of it is all their chants and their traditions. The other one, you know, went through five different players. And, it, you know, it, one had, a QR code to a Twitter page that had a 10-year-old picture of Darian Trammell in a suit at a wedding.
So and, they don't leave any stone unturned there.
Another one had, oh, yeah, they had somehow they got a hold of, Micah had somehow posted his Cash App handle for money transfers. And they said, God, wouldn't it be a shame if a whole bunch of people put in money transfer requests to Micah. So, you know, you got students sitting around for an hour before the game holding their seat. I mean, they all have cell phones. I mean, how many of them did a Cash App request to Micah? I mean, that's the kind of stuff they do. It's great there. The Pit is great. And one thing people have to realize is college basketball today, just like college football, a lot of the crowds are shrinking. And in the Pac-12, except for Arizona, I mean, maybe a couple games in Colorado, they are not full arenas at all. The Mountain West is kind of an aberration where Nevada sold out most nights, Utah State, New Mexico, Boise, San Diego State. You know, those teams are all getting huge crowds, and it's, you know, don't take it for granted. It's really, really cool and really special. And the one thing I want to say about Reese Waters, John, Adam, whether you think that's a tee or not, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that, Chris, but you saw on Friday night, Jalen House did that multiple times to the show, pointing at him, gesturing at him, swearing at him, screaming at him, no tee. And the ref who called the tee on Reese Waters is the same ref who ref the game in the Pit with San Diego State and would not call a tee on Jalen House for basically high-stepping into the Aztecs bench. So I thought that was a little odd. And a little inconsistent.
It's very inconsistent. And I looked at that replay. I was trying to figure out what Reese did to get the technical. And it looked like he was just yelling back to the crowd saying, I made a shot. That's not a technical foul. So I don't know
apparently
where that
he came. Cursed, and he never curses.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it was because we were in Logan, Utah, and he cursed. And, you know, that's a suggestion. I don't know. I don't know what. Maybe the standards are different. But would you call that?
I mean,
if you're in a high school game, the guy versus at a student section, you let
I would
go.
Honestly try to get up to him and say, you know, watch your mouth and give
keep
a warning.
It moving,
especially, I mean, you can't tell me Jalen House didn't throw a curse word in somewhere in all of those celebrations.
Oh,
hard to imagine.
I heard him. I was sitting behind him.
There you go. All right, Mark. Well, thanks for everything, man. It's been a fun year, and it's going to get more fun as we go along, and we love having you on. Thanks so much for contributing today, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
That was the famous Mark Ziegler. He is great. This morning when I texted him, he said, hey, I'm still out in Utah, and I'm not sure if I have good service, but let me give you a call right now and see if my service is okay. So he called me, service was good, and he came back, and he joined the show. So thank you very much, Mark Ziegler. That does it for today's Gwen and Chris. Hope you enjoyed it. Stick around because we are going into the Scraby Show Experience Chronicles, whatever you want to call it, and that's going to be happening here at 6 o'clock. So stick around. I'll be right back with you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.